Welcome to the Small Caps Podcast, where we discuss news and information related to ASX-listed companies and financial markets, keeping investors informed. Note that the content in this podcast is not financial or investment advice, and be sure to head over to smallcaps.com.au to get the latest market news. Now, without further delay, here's today's podcast.
Welcome back to Small Caps, ladies and gentlemen. My name, Kerry Stevenson. Today, I am speaking with Ed Ainscough. He is the Managing Director and Founder of Lunnon Metals. ASX code is LM8. A little bit of background. Lunnon Metals are in the Kambalda district of WA, which is massive nickel district. They've got four historical nickel mines. They've made a discovery. They've got at least seven nickel channels, which means the nickel is there. They're also only 25 kilometres from Nickel West Concentrator and 125 kilometres from Black Swan. So from a place where they are, they're in a perfect spot. Now, as I speak to Ed today, I've asked him to come on because they've just done a capital raise and they've also acquired some more nickel rights. So Ed, welcome back to Small Caps. Great to see you. You have been busy since I spoke to you just in January. Here we are in April.
We have, Kerry. Thanks for having us back. Yeah, it's been extremely busy, a busy quarter. And last week saw us cap it off by announcing both the acquisition of two new nickel mines and rights around those mines from St Ives Goldfields, who are our major shareholder, but also to, while we were in a halt, we raised $30 million from institutional high net worths, welcomed some new funds onto the register, and brought to a head really what we've really set about doing, which is to be pretty aggressive and really try and shorten the time between being an explorer and putting ourselves in a position to consider a development.
Before I get into the capital raise, because I want to do capital raise first and then we'll go into the acquisition side of it. Is it because of the location of where you are that you can afford to be as aggressive? In other words, you know that the nickel's there. It's just a matter of, I guess, understanding it a little bit more, the geology a bit more, so that you can make the most of what it is that you've got. Is that how you can shorten the time frame? Because ultimately that helps shareholders value.
Yeah, look, that's a good way of putting it. Look, we feel very blessed that we've got these tenements in Kambalda. It's one of the world's best known nickel belts. I think 1.6 million tonnes of nickel historically mined. I mean, when you said, you know, the nickel's there, we hope the nickel's there. But when you're trying to de-risk a project, obviously having a really super fertile belt is a massive, massive de-risking exercise. So we know we're in a heavily down belt. We need to do good geology, but it allows us to be aggressive. We're on granted M's. We're not on E's exploration tenements. We're on M's mining tenements in an area with a rich history, 55 years of exploration and mining for nickel and gold. So I think we find that a big enabler to just feel really confident. We've been there a long time. Aaron and I, my exploration manager, so we think we know the geology pretty well. You're never too old to learn lessons, and we're learning all the time. But it is a big enabler. It gives us confidence to be aggressive. And part of that with the capital raising is obviously to raise the money to put us in a position to be even more aggressive and really try and deliver for shareholders to take us out of that explorer stable and move us along the curve much quicker than maybe other companies who aren't as lucky to have ground in Kambalda are able to do.
Last time we spoke, Ed, you had quite a substantial tenement or package, if you like, in the Kambalda network. Why was it important to add these acquisitions? And talk us through the acquisition process and why it's important to your portfolio to have them.
The beauty of the acquisition is it's really it's a bolt-on. It's like probably best expression is putting the band back together. So we had Foster Jan. They were two nickel mines that were shut at the time WMC exited Kambalda and sold its gold business to Goldfields, which is why those two nickel mines that we already own went to Goldfields and were an opportunity. And then the only other two nickel mines that have never previously been transacted or been in the hands of a nickel-focused company since WMC are Silver Lake and Fisher, which sit in a very similar shaped set of polygons on the north side of Lake Lefroy, right in the heart of Kambalda. So we've actually brought back together the last four nickel mines that have never been held by a nickel-focused company. And the beauty is the strategy that we've deployed at Foster Jan, where we've drilled between large gaps in the WMC drilling. We've taken their drilling as a vector to look for opportunities and made that discovery at Baker and being very successful at Warren inside drilling that WMC did. We can just lift that strategy and we can apply it straight away at Fisher Silver Lake. So there's nothing new required. We need more bodies, more people on deck. But in terms of tactics, in terms of strategy, it really is taking something that so far has been very successful for us and then just applying it at two even better endowed mines, even closer to Kambalda. Like literally, it was a no-brainer when the opportunity came to work with our major shareholder to acquire them. It was something we had to separate the success on the ground from working corporately to get the deal squared away.
Was that part of the reason of doing a capital raise at around about the same time as well? Did you need to do that in order for the acquisition to go ahead? Talk to us.
No.
Capital raise, or was that separate?
Yeah, no, the capital raise is completely separate. We were quite clear in announcing it that while we've put funds allocated to the two new assets, if for some reason the deal wasn't to settle, and we expect it to go through in due course, but the money will actually then come back to Foster Jan. So we'd been thinking about raising money for a while, but as time went on, as the nickel price, since we last spoke, obviously the nickel price has done some crazy things, went up to $100,000 and got suspended on the LME. Where it settled back is still an amazing price. I mean, it's got to pinch yourself. But so all these events were happening in parallel, but they were actually independent of each other. But obviously, as you get close, the opportunity is just to bring them all together and deliver it, get it all done in 1 week. So, blessed to have the ground, blessed to work with a company like Goldfields, who've been extremely supportive. And we see it as great validation of the success we've had to date. Because they can see we can take these assets that have had no value in their portfolio and we can turn them into material value for all shareholders, of which obviously Goldfields is a significant one.
Yeah, so Goldfields still about 30% shareholder, is that correct?
Yeah, before both transactions, they're 32%. Then yep. With the capital raising, they dilute down to mid-20s, and then with the allocation of shares in consideration for the acquisition, they go back up to just a bit more than they're currently sitting at. I think it's about 34%.
Okay. All right. So they've still got considerable interest in what you're doing there. You mentioned a second ago that it might take a little bit longer, the acquisition of the Silver Lake Fisher. Is there a specific reason for it to take a bit longer, or is that just the way these things happen?
Well, Goldfields are our largest shareholder, so they are a related party, and because of that, we have to get an independent expert's report to assess the transaction. That will go to shareholders, then the other shareholders get to vote on the acquisition. So that takes a body of time to do, and in parallel to that, because of St Ives' ownership of London Metals, and in their own right, they need to get Foreign Investment Review Board approval for the transaction. But we're not anticipating any issue. We've done that previously as a private company with a joint venture with Goldfields back in 2015. And then we obviously had to do that when we IPO'd the company back in the middle of last year. So no policy issue, it's just time. Obviously there's a federal election on foot as well now. So we've allowed enough time in the whole process to get through those really just like regulatory steps, but we'll get through them. And then towards the end of the year, we'll be sitting there with, as you said, four nickel mines, seven nickel channels, and a discovery at Baker. So, that $30 million is obviously supercharging our ability to be aggressive again. That's kind of the message, right? We want to be aggressive.
Yeah, and I'm going to go into the capital raise in a moment. But, Ed, I just want to take you back because you listed in the middle of last year. I'm talking to you now in April, so less than a year after listing. If you look back to when you did list, did you think that you would have as much done as you have had to date? Because I'm looking, thinking you are being quite aggressive, which is very good because it means that you're getting on with the job a little bit quicker. So I guess the question I've got is, did you expect to be where you are today with the acquisition? I mean, was this all in the plan or have things fallen into place that you weren't expecting to give added value to shareholders?
No, look, the acquisition wasn't in the plan. We put in our prospectus that we would look for business development opportunities in Kambalda, as any good company should do. But no, nothing specific on the acquisition. And to answer your question, No, we're still pinching ourselves, to be honest. I mean, I've said this in many presentations, that when you go to the market at your IPO, and as a geologist who's worked that region for a long time, you say it's underexplored and you're confident in your technical assessment, but really your heart is still in your mouth, because until you've drilled any holes and proven that the thing was underexplored, you still don't know, because exploration is a difficult game. If it was easy, everyone would be doing it. But then when we hit Baker, and then we've had the success at Warren, we are obviously taking great confidence in our assessment that just because WMC didn't drill it, or just because WMC left large gaps, doesn't mean that things of value in a very buoyant nickel price market can't still be found. And while as we grow that resource, while those individual items might be quite modest, they're materially impacting on our balance sheet. They're clearly going to make the assessment of a potential restart much, much easier for the board to consider. So no, we didn't. We always wanted to be where we are, but no, we didn't expect to be where we are. And I must admit, like breaking for Easter with both of those announcements last week, we did kind of sit back and look at each other and go, oh my God, we've come a really long way in 9 months. And yes, you have to pinch yourself, but you've got to make the most of when things fall your way and get on with it. Keep throwing punches.
Yeah, and I think I just wanted to be clear to our community out there that there has been quite a lot done and a lot of things ticking the boxes, I guess, if you like. But I wanted to understand about the capital raise that you did. You've raised $30 million. Why now and why that amount and where's it going?
Well, we were very confident, as I said, it was unrelated to the acquisition, but there is a portion allocated to the acquisition in due course. Very confident that Baker can be bigger than it is. So there's $5 million of the 30 allocated to Baker. We've also put $2.5 million to continue the aggressive deep drilling at Warren. And we've said many times that we think Warren as a channel has got a lot less nickel currently than it should have compared to Foster right next door. So we want to address that imbalance and get Warren's mineral resource up if possible with further success. And then a big portion of the 30 million is 10 million is being directed towards the restart, the permitting and the dewatering of Foster mine to get us in a position where we can get the water levels down in Foster, consider digging out the old portal, which was backfilled, and actually then get people in underground assessing the decline and following that water level down to establish drill platforms so we can actually explore from underground. And the best analog of that is probably Bellevue Gold, who did a very similar process at the Bellevue operation, where they dewatered down to 250 metres. They let them get down, look at the decline, see what shape it was in, and establish some drill platforms underground. So you're drilling a lot shorter holes. You can look at the geology. You can start ground truthing some of the work you've done. So that was $10 million. And then with it, obviously, to do that, we need a lot more people. So people's probably our biggest constraint. We need technical positions. We need regulatory positions to re-enter underground. So we allocated about $2.5 million in terms of getting a bigger staff on board, trying to be more attractive in a very difficult market for labour, as I'm sure you know, countrywide, but especially in the goldfields of WA. So that was the 20. And then the last 10 were pretty well evenly split between Silver Lake and Fisher on the two new assets. And as I said, if that deal didn't close, and we're sure it will, that money will go back to Foster and finish the job at Foster in terms of dewatering and re-entering the mine.
There's a significant focus on Foster. Could you just remind our audience and myself as well, what is Foster got that there needs to be that sort of investment and that sort of focus versus Baker, Warren and the new acquisitions?
Okay, so 39,000 nickel tons currently in mineral resource all sits accessible off the old Foster decline. So there's approximately 9 kilometres of main decline workings. There's also a side decline that accesses Warren. So Warren and Foster are all accessible off the same entrance underground. And then there's about 1.5 gigalitres of water to dewater and drain from that mine and to discharge that out onto Lake Lefroy, which is adjacent to the properties. So the dewatering is probably a small component. We want to get on with that quickly because there's a time element to that. And then getting underground.
Sorry, Ed, sorry to interrupt you. Why is there a time element with the water dewatering?
Oh, just to dewater that amount of water, subject to the size of the pumps, takes a certain amount of time. You can go quicker, but there's a limit, obviously, to the size of the pumps you can get. So we'd be looking to knock that off in somewhere between 6 and 9 months. So the sooner we permit that and get it going, then the better positioned we are to get back underground, have a look at the decline and start drilling.
All right, so Foster's off first, but Baker and Warren are also going to have a focus. You're looking at more at people to be able to, I guess, continue this aggressive stance forward. What I want to know, Ed, is from a timeline point of view with Foster, you said 6 to 9 months just for the dewatering. Do you look at the geology alongside of that? What other work are you going to be doing at Foster at that time?
The beauty being on the granted ends, the mining tenements, is we can do everything in parallel. So you mentioned, I think, right at the start of the interview, how other companies have to do things in a sequential fashion. We can run everything in parallel. So the geology is extremely well known because we've been there a long time. We can, as the water level goes down, we can follow that down. So we can be doing the mine re-entry work in parallel. And then we can be doing a lot of the kind of the mine planning, the mine scheduling, the submissions for a mining proposal to go to the department. We can do that all in parallel. So it doesn't have to be sequential. So that 6 to 9 months will actually overlap with a lot of the other exercises that we'll be putting in place. And then, of course, on top of that, having found Baker, we've got to factor Baker in to all of that plan and planning around Foster, because obviously to do Baker and Foster together makes a lot more sense. Get better prices, better contract type terms if you're doing two modest things rather than two individually separate items. So, yeah, a lot of work to go. And we've actually recruited a development manager who amazingly did his time at Foster in the 1980s as a young mining engineer. And he's known to us from WMC and Goldfields Day. So he's come on and he's coordinating all that planning exercise so that takes it off my back and I can talk to you and he can get on pulling all the strings. But really, it's a question of time and money now. I think my view is that the assets have demonstrated their technical capacity to yield discoveries. We're very confident that when we get to Fisher and Silver Lake, they'll do the same because it's the same strategy with similar assets of a similar vintage. So really now it's a question of getting people on deck. We've raised the money, so that's the money component. Now to shorten the time, we need people to help us out.
Ed, I mentioned right at the start that you were 25 kilometres from Nickel West Concentrator. Does that mean that you don't need, are you in talks with them about taking your concentrate? You don't need to have your own concentrator there on site. Talk to me about the, I know it's not going to happen tomorrow, but I'm just thinking longer term when you get down the road of producing nickel concentrate, what's the process there? Are you going to be saving funds by going and using a Nickel West concentrator?
Yeah, well, certainly no plans to build any processing capacity ourselves. WMC, now Nickel West, retained an option on any nickel ore from our tenements dating back to the original 2001 transaction with Goldfields. So they have an option to take our ore. We can talk to other parties, but at the end of the day, you'd think Nickel West would be the logical partner being so close. Mm-hmm. So definitely no CapEx. The best analogue, I think, is David Southerman, Mincor, talks about this capital-like concept where because you don't need a processing plant, unlike a lot of gold juniors or gold developers where they have to find it and then they have to finance building a plant to process the gold ore. Again, we're blessed. Like Kambalda has such a rich history. And all of these mines fed that concentrator for 50 years before it shut in the late 20-teens. So now that Mincor has been successful with Cassini and restarting their operations, and I think this quarter they're delivering ore for the first time to Nickel West, that concentrator will be open. It's a big concentrator. And certainly we'll be having discussions with Nickel West when we've got our arms around what we think we can potentially deliver in the future. But we need to do the resource. We need to then do that planning and scheduling work in parallel to the permitting. And once we've got a firm feel of what our assets might be able to commit to in the future, we'll then start those kind of discussions. But again, quite a short fuse. You know, the templates are in place for those sort of relationships. Nickel West has been doing it for 20 years since they sold all the nickel mines. So a lot of experience on their side. We know all the same, you know, we've worked in that area for a long time. And Ian Junk, who's on our board, was part of the Mincor restart in the 2000s. He was then worked with Peter Harold at Lanfranchi when it was in Sally Malay Panoramic hands. So Ian's done this a few times, restarted mines. He's dealt with Nickel West with their ore offtake agreement. So lots of in-house knowledge about how to take that forward and take it forward efficiently.
Before I finish up with you, Ed, what I'd really like to also find out, you've been in the nickel game for a long time. You said at the start that the nickel price went a little bit crazy and then they had to stop the trading for a little while. Give us our audience your view, a bit of a macro view. Can these nickel prices continue to stay as strong as they are? Does that matter to your company? But I'd like to, from your point of view, having been in the industry for a while, where is nickel headed in this, I guess, this green revolution that we're going through to?
Number one, I'm no expert, so don't trust anything I say when it comes to nickel pricing. Where it went to was crazy. I think, again, the best way to assess the future is to look back. And I remember in the 2000s, when I think it got to $50,000 or $55,000 a tonne Australian, everyone went, oh, my God, we'll never see that again. And here we are sitting at $32,000 US, which approximates, I guess, $45,000 Australian a tonne. And there seems to be externally an acceptance that wherever it lands and wherever it stabilizes, because of the electric vehicle, because of the green energy revolution and the transition away from fossil fuels, that wherever nickel lands, it will be at a much higher elevated level compared to the past. Putting that aside, the beauty of being Kambalda again is that the grade is high relative to a lot of nickel assets. And nickel sulfide is a preferred source of this nickel sulfate to make those batteries. So we've got a couple of favorable factors that act as a hedge against wherever the nickel price is that we've got high grade in Kambalda. It's a preferred product. Nickel West is seemingly as committed to its nickel business with its nickel sulfate plant down in Kwinana. So, I mean, I think the future looks bright. If you're a Kambalda nickel sulfide explorer wanting to be a developer, I won't say it doesn't matter where the nickel price gets to, but we're just in a different world now than we were just when we last spoke. It's just changed so dramatically.
But even if the nickel price softened, your particular projects would still be very much economic from what I can see.
Well, subject to where it actually landed. But I mean, when we spoke last, it was still a great nickel price. I think it was around 17 or 18,000 US a tonne or thereabouts. So if it's anywhere between where it was and where it is now, I mean, happy days. I mean, what's not to love? And I don't really pay a lot of attention to electric vehicle because I see my job as finding as much nickel as safely as possible, as quickly as possible. And then the price and the economics will take care of itself.
Ed, it's always a pleasure to speak to you. And I really wanted to bring you on because I think that they're very important milestones in the London Metal story. The acquisition, as we said before, of Silver Lake and Fisher, the capital raising and where that money is going to. So thank you so much for, I guess, sharing with us what you're doing and how aggressively you're going about, uncovering what you've got there. But I like to finish off my chats with, as you already know, three reasons why, from January to now, things have changed a lot. Three more reasons why our investor audience should be sitting up and taking notice of LM8.
Okay, Kerry. Well, it has been a transformative week last week for the company. So, number one, we're now funded. I mentioned it was a question of time and money to move from where we were to where we'd like to be by the end of the year. We've now funded ourselves to do that. So really now it is a question of time, which is in our control in terms of recruiting people and getting on with it. We'll be putting out the Baker resource this quarter, hopefully. That was a discovery that wasn't in the resource when we IPO'd. It sat between the WMC drilling. So as a marker for what's possible in an area that WMC thought was well drilled, I think the market will be interested in Baker and how that lands. And then finally, obviously, the acquisition. You can't go past the fact that in 3 or 4 months' time, when that deal settles, we've put the band back together again. You know, so we've got those four last nickel mines, and we just can't wait to get on the ground and do what we've been doing at Foster Jan to do that at Fisher and Silver Lake as well. So, yeah, busy 3 months since I last spoke to you, probably an even busier 4 to 6 months coming up.
Well, Ed, thank you so much for coming back and giving us an update. Perhaps when you put the Baker resource out, come back and tell us what that's looking like. But a busy year ahead for LM8. Thanks so much for joining us and updating us at Small Caps today.
Always a pleasure, Kerry. Thanks for your time.